You're listening to the Tipton Children Podcast.
Let's start with our motivation, as usual. And I wonder sometimes when I study a text like this, if Nagarjuna knew that people like us would be studying it many, many centuries after he wrote it. And I think he must have. And he put his effort into writing this text for the king and for us, hoping that it would be passed down from generation to generation, and that people would learn it and meditate on it and benefit from it. So, considering that Nagarjuna wrote it for that purpose and for our full awakening, then let's cultivate our side of the deal and generate that aspiration for full awakening, as well as appreciation for Nagarjuna as the author, and the text for the beautiful way in which it sets out the path for us to practice. And so may we learn this text and integrate it in our mind, live it through our lives, and share it with others. For our long-term purpose of attaining Buddhahood and to benefit others as much as we possibly can right now. And one way we benefit is by working on ourselves, which this text is going to help us to do. So take a moment and cultivate your motivation. Okay, so last time we were talking about, well, the time before we were talking about the 16 actions to abandon doing, or the 13 to abandon and the 3 to practice, to create the causes for an upper rebirth. And then we got into this whole section about following the wrong path and being a teacher or being an individual who follows the wrong path, and then someone who's in the position of being a teacher following the wrong path and leading others on the wrong path. And Nagarjuna gave us the analogy of with all the cows walking together and the head cow, instead of going where the path was nice and clean and easy, walked along the edge of the cliff or walked into the deep jungle. And as a result, not only that cow, but all the other cows got really messed up with the snakes and the all sorts of harmful things in the jungle, or they fell off the edge of the cliff or whatever. So really, telling us to be careful of that kind of thing. And then he had also described some of the practices of, at his time, of the non-Buddhists who did, follow the wrong path. For example, people who did very extreme ascetic practices. Okay, in our day and age, it's the opposite. People don't do very ascetic practices. They do very indulgent practices in the name of practicing Tantra. Yeah, so it's the opposite, but in terms of what they do, but the result is still the same. So to, you know, to be careful about that kind of thing. Okay, and so having talked about the disadvantages of following the wrong path, now he's going to move into a section of talking about the results of creating, you know, destructive karma. And, you know, because if we're aware of the kinds of results that we will experience as a result of following the wrong path, which prods us to engage in destructive actions, then, you know, we'll be a lot more careful about who we follow and what we do in our lives. Okay, so here we're getting into the section talking about the results of karma. So in general, there's three results of karma that happen in future lives, you know, unless the karma is very heavy. If an action is very heavy, then it can be experienced in this lifetime. But ones that aren't so heavy, usually, you know, it's in a future lifetime. So first we have the fruitional result, or it's also translated the ripening or the maturation result, and that's the rebirth that we take. And then the second one is called the causally concordant result, and that is when we're born human, what we experience as a result of doing the action. And that has two branches to it, the causally concordant result. One is the causally concordant result in terms of our experience, which is that we experience something similar to what we caused other people to experience. And then the other part of that is the causally concordant result that is in terms of our behavior, which is the habit to do the action again. Okay. And then the third result is the environmental result, which is to be born in a certain kind of environment, yeah, and experience certain things in the environment. So we're on verse 14, and the outline here is for the causally concordant results of non-virtue. Okay? So, of course, there's causally concordant results of virtue as well, but he's going to tell us the non-virtuous first. So it says, due to killing, one is born with a short lifespan. Due to violence, one encounters much torment. Due to stealing, one becomes impoverished. Due to adultery, one has enemies. Okay, so if we follow wrong paths and engage in aberrant practices and behaviors, or even if we try and follow the correct path, but we're slack off and we're lazy or we're negligent, then we will create lots of destructive actions. And then these are the kind of results that we will experience if we have created complete actions. So complete actions, you can describe them, sometimes they do it in terms of three parts, sometimes in terms of four parts. Here we're going to do it in terms of three, but the meaning is the same. So the first part is the preparation. Yeah, so identifying the object, having the intention to do the action, having an afflicted mind, you know. So all of the preparation, what comes before doing the action. And then the second part is the actual action. And then the third part is finishing the action and rejoicing about it afterwards. Okay, so in order to get all of three results, you have to have actions with all three of these parts complete. If part of it is missing, then it's not a complete action. So, for example, you know, you set out to kill the wasps, and you know, so you have the motivation, and but then before you could go do it, then somebody says, come eat pancakes. You go and eat pancakes, and then you forget about killing the wasp, so it doesn't get done. Okay, so that's not a complete action because you're missing the actual action and the completion of the action. Okay, or let's say you had the intention to go kill the wasp. The person making the pancakes, overslept, so you got involved in killing the wasps and, spraying the stuff and everything. And then you heard the call for pancakes and you left. So you didn't have a chance to do a really good job of it. Yeah, there's still a lot of raid and stuff left. So you had the intention, you had part of the action, but the wasp didn't die. So that's still incomplete. Okay? Or let's say you had the intention to kill wasps, but you wound up killing grasshoppers instead. So then it's not a full action because you didn't kill what you had intended to kill. Okay? So things like that. So it's very helpful. You should, in your meditation, go through all 10 of the paths of non-virtue and make examples of them when all three parts are correct, when two parts, not correct, but all three parts are fulfilled, when only two parts are fulfilled, when only one part is fulfilled. Okay? So that'll give you, and then, use it to look at actions that you've done in your life. And, and then that gives you a better idea of the strength of the karma that karmic seeds on your mind strength. Okay? So here, due to killing, one is born with a short lifespan. So that's the result, the causally concordant result in terms of our experience. So by killing, we cause somebody else to have a short lifespan. So later, when we're born as a human, then we have a short lifespan. Or it could also, I think, ripen in animal rebirth or some other rebirth. So you see sometimes, we just got this email today about some people that one of our nuns knows. One of their daughters was in Nepal during the earthquake, and it looks like she died. She was 19 years old. So, this kind of thing of your life being cut off early, still when you're young, then that would be a ripening of this kind of causally concordant result in terms of your experience. Yeah. It sounds very nice when you study them in a book, but when you apply them to people you know, then it takes on a whole different meaning. Okay? Then due to violence, one encounters much torment. So, similarly, if we do acts of violence, beating people up or harming them physically in any kind of way, then as a result in a later future life, we'll have a lot of physical pain and other people will also harm us. Okay, so similar to what we made them experience, then we experience. Okay, so the physical pain can come in many ways. How people harm us can come in many ways. If you get distracted playing with a cat during teaching...
She's playing. I wanted to prevent.
Oh. Oh, was she going to kill?
She's playing. Yeah. No, it's
going to. Oh. Okay. Now come sit up on the table, Maitri. Okay. Then the third line, due to stealing, one becomes impoverished. So similarly, when we steal, when we take what hasn't been given, we cause others to lack what they need or it interferes with their lives. So the result is that then we're impoverished and we lack what we need and so on. Okay, and then the causally concordant result of adultery is having enemies. Okay, and so what that means is in a future life, you know, because of either being in a relationship and going with someone outside of your relationship, or you're not in a relationship but you go with somebody who is, then in a future life you have many relationship problems. Okay? Because, you know, when you have this kind of behavior, you're creating problems in other people's relationships as well as your own. So then you have relationship problems. And it's like your spouse becomes your enemy. So, you know, lots of quarrels and bickering with your spouse, or maybe your spouse runs off with somebody else, in which case you really do have enemies, and so it creates kind of a mess. So you can see, you know, in people's lifetimes, sometimes people, you know, they're very nice people, but they have, you know, whatever relationship they're in, so many relationship problems. Yeah, so this is the kind of karma that comes from that. Or the one of stealing, you see people who, you know, they do business, but their business doesn't take off, or their warehouse burns, or, you know, somehow they lose their stuff. And so this kind of thing, okay? Sometimes the result of stealing, too, is you something belongs to you, but you can't access it. So, like having a trust fund that you cannot access. Okay, so it's the result of stealing in previous lives. Okay, then verse 15. By lying, one becomes reviled. Through speaking divisively, one loses friends. Due to speaking harshly, one hears unpleasant sounds. From engaging in idle talk, one's words will be disregarded. So verse 14 was about the physical non-virtues. These are about the verbal non-virtues. Okay, so by lying, one becomes reviled. So you have a lot, you get criticized a lot and looked down upon a lot. And even though he puts this other another result, in something else. It's a different text describe the results slightly different ways. In the way I've learned it before, is if you lie, then in future lives other people don't believe you. So even you're telling the truth, people don't believe you. So, and you know, we may have had that happen in our life too. You know, there's difficulties with somebody, we try and explain, we're telling the truth, the people keeps accusing us of lying. Okay, because that could be a result of having lied in previous lives. And then through speaking divisively, one loses friends. Actually, that happens in this life too, very often, you know, because if we speak divisively, then others know us, come to know us as a person who stirs up trouble, and they don't want to hang around us. Okay, so in future lives, you know, in that kind of way, we don't have good friends. We're separated from our close friends, or we can't make good friends, or friendships crumble. You know, we have a trusted relationship, and they really crumble. So this is because of using our speech to create disharmony amongst other people. Okay, then due to speaking harshly, one hears unpleasant sounds. Okay, so we hear ridicule, we get scorned, people tease us, they make fun of us, they say all sorts of things that are very hurtful. Yeah, so that's a result of speaking harshly. So you can really see how this comes about, you know. It's like you do something that makes other people experience something, and then before you know it, you're experiencing the same thing. Yeah. I've told you the story many times of my sixth grade antics of expelling Rosie Knox out of our clique, and the next week they expelled me. So it's the same kind of thing, yeah. mine happened in this life, but who knows what's going to happen in future lives. But, you know, it's the same kind of dynamic. And then from engaging in idle talk, one's words will be disregarded. So again, that makes sense, you know, when we're just chattering blah, 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 without any kind of meaning or purpose, just to waste time or, you know, be humorous or who knows what, then, you know, in future lives, we just hear all sorts of nonsense, you know? And even we express our, you know, we have an opinion and we share something and we have a good idea, people disregard it. You know, in other words, because we did a lot of idle talk and wasted other people's time, then as a result, everything we, you know, so much of what we say in a future life, people will disregard because, again, they'll think we're wasting their time. Okay? So it's very interesting, you know, when you really think in your life, there's two ways to help you think about this. One is when you do any of these actions and then think, okay, it's going to cause this kind of result. And, you know, am I willing to experience that kind of result? If not, then I need to do some purification. And I also need to clean up my act and stop doing that kind of behavior. So that's one way of looking at it, from the present going into the future. Another way to look at it is to look at things that are happening in your life right now and think, this happened because of what I did in the past. Okay, so if you're having, you know, romantic relationship problems now, then think, okay, in the past I was unfaithful. Or if you're having financial problems now, then think, in the past I was taking other people's stuff. Okay, and so when you do it that way, it helps you, you know, take responsibility for the situation, and instead of blaming somebody else, to say, but I created the principal cause for this, you know, through my own self-centered, ignorant actions. And so now I have to experience the result. And if I don't like this, then I need to stop creating the cause in the future. Okay? So meditating on all of these, you know, and going through them in depth is really very helpful for encouraging us to change our behavior. Yeah, and so if we have some bad habits that we're having difficulty, you know, letting go of, thinking of the result of them can really help us let go, because, you know, you think of what the results are like and it's like, I don't want that. And so it can be very helpful, you know, looking at your friends' lives. Also, when you read the newspaper or if you watch some kind of program, and you look at what people are experiencing, and then you think of the kind of karma they created to experience that. Or you look at what they're doing right now, and then you think, you know, that's what kind of result they're going to experience in the future. If you do that, then reading the newspaper becomes an excellent Lam Rim teaching. Okay? Or you watch a movie, and it becomes a, you know, quite a good Lam Rim teaching for you.
What do we experience when, like tonight, I was not hungry. I said to myself, if you eat, you take advantage. Not advantage. I knew I was doing something wrong by eating, and I ate anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I even went for a second serving. So I look at, okay, what's going on here inside?
Mm-hmm.
But what would be the result of my action?
Hmm. Okay. It's hard to say exactly, but I would think if we're eating too much, that, you know, then the result might be not having enough food in the future. Something like that, yeah? Something along that line.
There's a question online.
Oh, uh-huh.
So it does karma also ripen in how we experience something? For instance, we may hear ridicule, but that's just how we hear it, not actually what is being said.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it could be in somebody ridiculing us and us understanding it as ridicule, or it could be somebody not ridiculing us, but we're so super sensitive that we experience pain from being ridiculed. Yeah, so it could be experienced in both ways. The idea being that when the result of non-virtue is pain and suffering, the result of virtue is happiness. Okay. I would say also that the that one of feeling like other people are ridiculing you even though they aren't, it's very clear how that relates to, you know, our speaking harshly to others and making fun of them. And then, you know, that's what we then start to see in other people, isn't it? You know, so maybe not, sometimes it happens in this lifetime, but, you know, sometimes it happens in future lifetimes just because our mind's so attuned to that kind of thing. Okay, then 16 goes into the three mental actions and also intoxicants. So covetousness destroys one's desired objects. Malice is said to bestow fear. Wrong views lead to evil worldviews. Consuming intoxicants brings mental confusion. Okay? So the causally concordant result of covetousness, which is kind of what you're saying, except you acted it out. It wasn't just the covetousness is the mind desiring things, but you're not necessarily acting out, you know, but in your example you were. So the result is being unable to obtain what you desire, and whatever plans you make, then there's lots of hindrances to them. Okay? So you want to get something or you need something, you can't get what you need. Yeah, the desired objects are destroyed. And then malice, you know, having ill will, again, this is just mental, you don't have to do anything, but nourishing ill will against somebody else, then the result of that is to be very fearful and suspicious ourselves in the future lives. And you can again see that link, because when we have malice towards others, yeah, we're causing them to be suspicious and fearful. And our mind is getting really sunk into that whole dynamic of, you know, anger and ill will and, you know, tormenting somebody with you know, mentally, we're tormenting somebody else, we want to torment them or something. And then it comes back to us that we feel fear and suspicion. You know, this could have to do sometimes with, you know, when people have a lot of paranoia, or people are very, very fearful, or they're seeing danger where there isn't danger, you know, but their lives are consumed with a lot of fear and suspicion, you know, not being able to trust. So you can see how it's involved with, you know, the mind that has ill will and malice. Okay, and then wrong views lead to evil worldviews. So when we cultivate wrong views in this lifetime, then, you know, or we're interested in wrong views, wrong doctrines and stuff like that, then in future lifetimes, we're again very susceptible to having these kind of wrong views, or we're interested in them. Also having deceitful thoughts is an outcome of having wrong views. Okay? It's kind of like there's some people that, I was thinking about this because a similar situation happened recently, where you give somebody advice like, you know, kind of, this is a wrong view, or this is a practice that shouldn't be done, or da 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 da. And some people, their minds are such that as soon as they hear don't do it, then they become very interested. Yeah. Oh, what's that practice I shouldn't do? What's that view I shouldn't think about? What's that teacher that's coming? You know, then all of a sudden they get so interested. Okay? And then, you know, kind of, I don't know what it is, but they get more and more into having wrong views. Okay? And then consuming intoxicants brings mental confusion. So that happens this lifetime and future lifetimes. Yes, instantaneously. Yeah, but also it. So, you know, you take intoxicants, it brings your mental confusion right now. But then in future lives, even you don't take intoxicants, you're going to have a very difficult time thinking clearly. Yeah, as a result of, you know, I mean, you can see when you nourish the attitude that likes zoning out and likes, you know, being in la-la land, yeah, then that you're going to have that kind of mentality in a future life too as a result of it, yeah? Which is really sad because then, you know, at that time, maybe you meet the Dharma and you really want to practice, but your mind is you know, quite foggy. Okay, so I already talked about how the causally concordant result has two parts. Yeah, the one that in terms of our experience, which I just got done describing, and then the one in terms of our habitual actions. So it's very helpful, you know, to think about that because the one about the causally concordant result in terms of our habitual behavior, that actually is the most deadly of all of the results. Yeah. Now you might say, but why isn't the fruitional result, let's say you're born in hell, isn't that the worst thing that could happen to you, the worst karmic result? Actually not. Okay? Because if you have an unfortunate rebirth, you're born in that realm for, as you know, corresponding to the kind of karma. And when that karma is exhausted, that rebirth ends and finished. That karma is used up. Yeah, your suffering is now in the past, and that your mind is no longer obscured by that kind of karma. Okay, it fruited and it's over. The difficulty with this one of the causally concordant one in terms of our behavior is that it makes us do the same action again in the future. And so instead of just ripening in an unhappy result and finishing, it ripens in our doing the action again, and if that action is complete with all three parts, then again we're creating the karma to experience all those three results. And then again we do the action and we create more karma to experience the result. And then again we do it. Okay? So in the long term, you can see that one is actually the worst because it just makes us continually create negativity. Okay? And so it's very important, you know, to put our energy into purification, and that's why the teachers all, you know, advise that we do purification on a daily basis. You know, so when you're here at the Abbey, you're doing prostrations in the morning and Vajrasattva in the evening, so there's lots of purification going on. So it's with the four opponent powers, so generating regret, yeah, then generating bodhicitta and taking refuge, it's the second one. Third is making the determination not to do the action again. And fourth is some kind of remedial behavior. And so you do these four repeatedly, and then that, lessens the result of the karma until we can realize emptiness. And then realizing emptiness actually extracts the seed from the mind string. You know, in the meantime, we can burn it. It's not going to ripen. but we have a burnt seed in the mind stream instead of, you know, these are metaphors. Don't go looking for burnt seeds in your mind. Okay. And then the environmental result is you know, we happen to be born, or we happen to live in a certain kind of environment, or we happen to be in a certain place when a particular natural disaster occurs. Okay, so for example, with killing, you're born in a place where the medicine doesn't have much effect, so it's difficult to sustain your life. As an environmental result from stealing, then the crops don't ripen. You know, there's the experience of famine. From unwise and unkind sexual activity, you're born in a very muddy place. Yeah, from some of the different verbal ones, you're born from, like, creating disharmony with our speech. Then you're born in a place where there's lots of thorns, you know, and thistles all around. Okay. I think knapweed must be a result of idle talk. Yeah. Born in a place. Knapweed, you know, because knapweed, no purpose. Yeah, just wait. You know, you have to put in all this time to pull it. And, yeah. Okay, so result of lots of idle talk. So, you know, in this way, you're in different places when different natural disasters occur, or different kinds of environment. Okay? And Kenzo Wangdapa, when he was explaining, Kenzo Rinpoche, when he was explaining this, he was saying, you can see that some people, they're in a certain environment that's not very pleasant, and they have the opportunity to move and go elsewhere, but they just say, no, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to stay here. And so they stay in a place which is not a very pleasant place, you know, and that's because of this kind of environmental karma. Even though they could, you know, hypothetically leave, they don't want to. Okay. Oh, so then he explained that we may wonder why that there's three parts to the action, the preparation, the actual action, and the completion, and why there's also three parts, or three types of results: the fruitional result, the result, the causally concurrent result, and the environmental result. And he said that that's because when you have a complete action, the preparation, the motivation, principally brings the fruitional result. The actual action principally brings the causally concordant result, and the conclusion of the action principally brings the environmental result. Yeah. So here, you know, when we say that our motivation is the most powerful thing, you know, in determining the karma, yeah. So here it's linked with the fruitional result, you know, the first thing. Yeah. Uh-huh.
The fruitional result, how is that different from the causal?
The fruitional result is the realm that you're born into.
Oh.
And then the causally concordant result is what happens to you in that rebirth. Okay. Then verse 17. Through, because remember we had the other three things that we were advised to do: to be generous, to keep good livelihood, and then to abandon harming people. Yeah, so those were the other three to make the 16. Yeah, right. No, we had the 10, and then we had not taking intoxicants. Abandoning along a livelihood
and abandoning
harm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's those three. That's going on the 13, but then for the three that we were supposed to do, one was generosity.
Honoring,
you know, those worthy of honor, and
love.
And love. Okay. So here, The first line in verse 17, through not giving gifts, one is poor. So that has to do with one of the actions we should do. Wrong livelihood results in getting tricked, so that's an action we shouldn't do. Arrogance leads to a lowly station. That's what?
Lowly station,
like an inferior status. Yeah, people look down on you. So arrogance would be the one about not honoring those worthy of respect. And then jealousy brings about an attractive appearance. So maybe that has to do with harming others. Okay. So, through not giving, through being miserly, also poverty comes. So poverty, it comes from stealing, it can come from coveting, it can come from miserliness, through not giving. So it's related to all of those, okay? So the basic thing is not being generous, and then it creates poverty, okay? And then being surrounded by people who are always trying to cheat us and deceive us and trick us. So this is a result of practicing wrong livelihood. So remember when we talked about wrong livelihood for lay people, it was like charging more than something is worth, or loaning somebody something and then telling them to pay back a whole lot, or you borrow something from somebody and say you didn't borrow that much and you pay them back less, or all kinds of deceptive business practices. And then that's for lay people. And then for monastics, we talked about hinting and flattery and hypocrisy and pretending to be somebody you're not, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so here when it says, the result, wrong livelihood results in getting tricked, okay? So from the viewpoint of the layperson, you're doing, actions that trick people, lying and stealing. And from the viewpoint of the monastics, you also do actions that trick people, because with, a rotten motivation, you're pretending to be kind or pretending to be elevated or something like that to get somebody to give you something. Okay? So it's both things with wrong livelihood or involve tricking others, and then the result is in a future life that people trick us and deceive us. Okay? So that maybe they propose bad business investments, and we go along with that, or people borrow money from us that they have no intention of returning. So things like that. We meet people that, it happens, don't you? People are always falling for some scheme or another from, the whole thing of elder abuse now, with people, trying to frighten elders into believing this, that, or the other thing, or the whole thing that we had here. And one of our people got very frightened by it, by one of these, calls saying, I'm an IRS agent and you didn't pay your income taxes and we're going to come and arrest you if you don't, kind of pay up right away. And so somebody heard that and got very scared, even though they hadn't done anything wrong, So that's the kind of, thing that happens. You get cheated and deceived as a result of wrong livelihood in previous lives. And then being born in a low social position or in a group that faces a lot of prejudice is the result of being arrogant in past lives. Okay, so when we're arrogant, we're puffed up, we look down on other people, we're prejudiced and biased, and don't treat other people very well. So what happens in the next life? We're born in those very same positions. Okay, so it's quite interesting sometimes when you look at international conflicts. Yeah, some people, of course, the same in one generation the people are persecuted, and in the next generation they're the persecutors, things back and forth like that. Yeah, so you can see how that's a how that has something to do with our karma. And then jealousy brings about unattractive appearance. So that happens even in this life when we're jealous. You know, the expression on our face is always quite nasty and ugly. And so it also ripens in our body being quite feeble, lacking vitality, we're not very attractive. And so that's a result of being jealous of other people's status or wealth or whatever, you know, in a previous life. Is that then in this, you know, in our future life as a human being, then we're quite unattractive and, you know, can't get what we want. Okay, then verse 18. From anger comes a bad complexion, stupidity from not questioning the wise. Okay. So when they sell all this stuff to make your complexion look nice, they never tell you that the principal thing you have to do is stop being angry. Yeah? But you can see with anger and jealousy, both of them, you know, even in this life, when our minds have that in our mind, we look very unattractive. I mean, if you see a person who's angry, even they're not saying anything, do you want to go be near them? No. You know, even they're not saying anything, just the look on their face. You know, or even they say hello. Hello. You know, anything. Then it's like, I think I'm going the other direction. Yeah? So, you know, we don't appear attractive to other people, even this lifetime. Yeah, when we're angry. So future lifetimes, then we're born in a form that is not very attractive to other people. Then stupidity comes from not questioning the wise. So somebody asked about this. What was the situation recently? Somebody asked.
And Brian, that was the cause for creating the karma to be interested in.
Oh, right, yeah. How do you create the karma to be interested in the teachings? Okay, so stupidity, which is the opposite of being interested in the teachings, okay, or even you're kind of interested, you can't understand anything. When we have that kind of result, it means that we didn't follow wise people in a previous life, or we studied with unqualified teachers and followed their advice in previous lives, okay? Or perhaps we had the opportunity to learn the Dharma, but we decided to go play golf instead, or, you know, go for a vacation in the Bahamas instead of learning the Dharma, because we really weren't that interested, or we were kind of interested, but we got distracted. Mañana and la mañana. So, you know, we don't respect people who are worthy of respect. You know, we don't have any interest in spiritual matters. We don't respect the people who, you know, have very high spiritual attainments. And so as a result, then in a later life, we don't meet those people. We don't meet good teachers. We don't meet the Dharma. Okay, so we remain confused and ignorant. So that comes from this lifetime, you know, not questioning the wise, meaning not, you know, seeking out wise people and following their advice. Yeah, and getting involved with people who are not wise and following their advice. Okay, so important to... when we receive teachings, to really think about them, to listen carefully, to think about them, to ask questions. When you have a chance to learn the Dharma, to really take that opportunity and learn the Dharma. Yeah. And you can see sometimes when people are around the Dharma a lot, they really take it for granted. And it's like, okay, Dharma's really good, but, you know, I just don't feel like going to teachings tonight. Yeah. So then all of a sudden you don't feel well. And, you know, okay. I don't feel well is, you know, I don't feel well and I don't have time. Yeah. Those are always really good excuses because nobody can ever question them. Yeah. Now, it's true, sometimes we may not feel well and sometimes we may not have time. But lots of times we phrase things to ourselves using those two things as a reason because they're completely safe. Nobody else can say, but you feel fine because they can't crawl inside of us. And nobody else can say, but you have time because they don't know everything we're doing. Okay? So those two in the book of excuses, those two come first, yeah? Okay, like I said, sometimes they're not excuses, but sometimes they are. What do you think?
I hear I'm too tired a lot.
Yeah, yeah, I'm too tired. Yeah, I'm too tired, I don't feel well, yeah.
You can't question it.
Yeah, you can't question it. Yeah, so one of my teachers used to say, yeah, when it comes to going to Dharma, things, you're way too tired. When it comes to gossiping with your friends, you can stay up all night. It's true. It's true. Okay, then 18, the verse 18, C and D, the last two lines, this is talking about the fruitional result, which is result in the lower rebirth. So Nagarjuna says, these are the effects when one is born as a human, but prior to all of them is a bad rebirth. Okay, so when he said these, he's meaning the results, the causally concordant results, so those you experience when you're born as a human. Yeah, it could happen in other rebirths too. But prior to having that result happen, you usually have the fruitional result. So if you have a full, complete action, the first result is the fruitional one that comes about. Okay, so the Yogacharya Bhumi says that when, this is a text, the Chinese say it's by Maitreya and the Tibetans say it's by a Sangha. But a Sangha and Maitreya are teacher and student, so hopefully they don't get jealous of one another when somebody else is credited with the text. Can you just hear one of them say, Asanga, you're getting credited with writing that stupendous text, and it was mine! Yeah, isn't it nice that that kind of stuff doesn't happen with holy beings?
I don't think it would be the opposite. No, you take the credit.
Yeah, right. Yes, yes. Always wanting to give the credit to somebody else. Okay, so Yogacharya Bhumi talks about, you know, if an action has a very strong motivation, then one's born in the hellish realms. If you have a medium strength motivation, you're born as a hungry ghost. And if you have a weaker motivation, you're born as an animal. Okay, so that's just speaking in general, you know, because of course it depends on what the action is, how it was done, if it's naturally negative or not. Yeah, so this is just a general speaking. But in that way of thinking, you know, the lowest or most suffering rebirth would be the hells, then the hungry ghosts, and then the weakest would be the animals. Okay? In the Sutra of the Ten Grounds, which is one of the Mahayana sutras, it's also one of the sutras in the Avatamsaka Sutra, which is a really big sutra. So in that, it talks about it, you know, again, to be reborn in a hellish rebirth, it's a very strong motivation. But they have the middle strength motivation being for an animal, okay, and being born as an animal, and for a very weak motivation being born as a hungry ghost. And that is looking at it, you know, why the animal and the hungry ghost are switched around, is because that's looking at it from the sake of the mind of that rebirth. So it said that hungry ghosts, their minds are a little bit clearer than animals, because we look with animals and their minds are really dull, you know, very difficult for them to understand. Whereas hungry ghosts, their mind is a little bit more intelligent than animals in general, and so it's easier for them to improve the conditions of their life and maybe even enter the path to liberation in a future life. So that's why, you know, sometimes you hear one order, sometimes you hear the other order. Okay, then verse 19 is the result of virtuous karma is the opposite of those. Okay, so Nagarjuna says, such are widely known to be the fruitional results of these actions that are called non-virtues. For all the virtuous actions, there are the opposite effects. Okay? So, for example, saving life, the concordant, it's hard to say again and again, result is to have a long life oneself. Yeah? For abandoning stealing, then the result is to have wealth. For being faithful in relationships, the result is to have a good, good friendships and good relationships with other people. Okay, for not lying, the result is that people respect your opinion and respect what you say and they believe you. Okay, so to remember that the virtuous actions are either, you know, consciously abandoning the non-virtues, or doing the opposite. Both of those are considered virtuous actions. Okay? So it could be abandoning stealing, or it could be being generous. Okay? It could be abandoning lying, or it could be telling the truth. Yeah? So both of those would be virtuous actions. Okay? So, yeah. So it's very good, you know, in your meditation, again, to go through all the 10 virtues as well as the 10 non-virtues and really think of the different results that you experience from them. And that, again, you know, if you do it in terms of the 10 virtues, it really encourages you to, to live in a constructive way and live in an honest and wholesome way. Yeah, so that's, you know, when we feel like our ethical conduct is lacking and we don't have the motivation to change it, then, you know, meditating on karma and its results, going through all these actions, the non-virtuous ones and then the virtuous ones, that will give us some impetus and make us more eager to be attentive and conscientious about our behavior. Mm-hmm.
So, an action such as, say, taking intoxicants would produce a rebirth in maybe like the animal realm, and then once you come around to the human realm again, it would also affect.
Right.
Double whammy.
Yeah, that's for all of them. Yeah, and actually triple whammy because you have the environmental result too. Yeah, so you know when we talk about the four principles of karma, one is that a small action can bring a big result. So this is a good example of it. One action then brings multiple results. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it seems to me, yeah, not, well, he was just saying that not questioning the wise means that you're you can't meet the Dharma in a future lifetime, okay? Or you can't understand it if you do meet it. It would seem to me that it could also be, a result, it could result in an animal rebirth as well, because animals, the principal quality is, being dumb. Yeah?
Do we need to ask good questions instead of blah blah to hear ourselves?
Yes, I think that's a good idea. Yeah? And when you ask a question, have the question clear in your mind and make it very succinct. Huh?
Someone asked, how does a mental imprint due to karma create an experience?
Magic. No, it has, the imprint, yeah. The imprint is a potential. The karmic imprint or karmic seed, what it means is potential. It's the potential to experience something. Yeah. And so then when the conditions come together, that potential ripens for us to experience something. Yeah. So in the case of non-virtue, it ripens in the experience of pain, either physical or mental, and virtue, pleasure or well-being.
Mm-hmm. Do potentials ever cancel each other out? Or is it more likely, like in the case of stealing and being generous in all in one lifetime, you might be born wealthy, but then lose it all in the next?
Yeah, sometimes it's like that. You're in one lifetime, you steal and you're generous, and then in a future lifetime, you're born wealthy, but then you lose it. Yeah, so that certainly could happen. Or sometimes, the generosity can, like if you're deliberately trying to purify your karma and that you've been very stingy and you say, as in the Four Opponent Powers, the last one is a remedial action. So you say the remedial action, I'm going to make offerings to the Three Jewels, or I'm going to make offerings to charities, or to support, hospitals or whatever, then in that way it can help to purify and cancel out, you can say, the karma from stealing.
What you referred to earlier as burnt seeds?
Yeah. Either, if you purify very continuously, then the seed gets kind of burnt. Otherwise, if your purification isn't so strong, then the karma is still there. It can ripen, but the result won't be as strong, or the result won't last as long, or the result won't come so soon, so you have more time to do more purification.
I know a person who stole in a big chain of stores, mm-hmm. a well-known chain, and when later on, when he knew to repay it, when he needed a t-shirt or something, he would, even if it's that place, it's double, triple the price, he would go and buy.
Okay, so to make up for it, somebody who used to shoplift, then when he realized that wasn't so good, then when the price was high, he would go back to the same store and buy it. Yeah.
This thing about the two different ways of creating virtue, through restraint or through actively doing the action, somehow that doesn't seem quite equal. Like, there would be more weight to having generosity, for example, mm-hmm. than refraining from stealing.
Okay. Yeah, so it seems like unequal, that generosity should be more weightier than just refraining from stealing. Yeah. But, you have to look. If somebody gives you, the perfect situation, it's an underhanded business deal, but they, give you the opportunity to make a ton of money, I mean, many people are very taken by that.
Yeah.
And to restrain from doing that takes a lot of sacrifice, sacrifice of one's worldly pleasure. Whereas for that same person, you know, giving $10 may not be a big deal. Okay?
Yeah.
So it you know, it depends on the situation of it. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah.
Is there some sort of, I'm sure there is, some sort of correspondence to some of the things that are happening globally?
Hmm.
Vast changes, environmental,
mm-hmm.
or the incredible wars continue.
Oh, yeah.
So,
all the things, you know, the climate change, the wars and famines and things, the floods, the earthquakes, you know, these things, it's not that karma causes these things, because these things have their own physical laws that make them happen, but karma causes us to be there when those things happen. Okay? Now, of course, in the case of karma, you know, climate change, we're actively creating the cause and actively experiencing the result. But for future generations who are going to be here even after we're gone, which could be our own future lives, having to experience the result of climate change that came about through negligence now, you know, being born in a future and experiencing that would have to do with the karma created now.
The actual the laws
the natural laws of biology, chemistry, and so on, those things work.
Okay, but it's the fact that you're there.
That you're there and you experience pleasure or suffering as a result. Okay, because karma, the chief way that karma ripens is in terms of, you know, happiness and suffering. Okay? Mm-hmm.
So 2 weeks ago when you talked about complete action, you gave it in four parts, and you kind of just gave it in three parts and combined the third and fourth. Is there any reason for that?
What do you have as the four parts?
Rejoicing.
Oh, that's part of the third.
It is.
Yeah, it's completing the action and being happy about it.
Oh, okay. So
yeah.
I have to just separate that out.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's dedicate.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lobsang's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Guru-nam-mandala-kam niryatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezig, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West Florida.